The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today is Fred M., the founder of Media Takeout. And this may be a surprising episode for some, being that while this podcast has been about many things, gossip certainly isn't one of them, and it isn't today. Now, while Media Takeout is a gossip site, its founder, Fred M., is so much more than just the tea, as you'll find out today. I found him very humble and easy to talk to, but more than anything else, extremely intelligent, and he is for sure a pioneer in his industry. So let's get it started. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast. Pull up,
get it. Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 76 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, among other things, the founder of Media Takeout, Fred M. Thank you for being here.
That's great to be here. Thanks.
Hey, man, I'm excited to have you on. Reading your bio, you have a very interesting background. You started off as a lawyer. You got your JD MBA from Columbia University. They don't exactly just hand those out. So congratulations on that. Then you went into a laundry service. Is that what I read?
Yeah. I mean, I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I mean, I went to law school and business school, which kind of takes you down this corporate path. And I guess I expected that that's what I was going to be. And plus, there's a lot of money in there. My parents wanted me to go down that path. I felt like I was groomed and educated to go down that path. But inside of me, I always knew that I wanted to start a business. I wanted to kind of control my own future, especially as a Black person. You know, if I were a white person, you know, maybe it would be fine to just kind of go down this road, and I would have been rewarded for the fruits of my labor. But as a Black person, I just, you know, wherever I was, I never felt like I would always, I'd get 100% fair shake. Mm. And so I was like, look, if I'm not going to be getting a fair shake in corporate America, why not go out on my own, try my luck in the world of entrepreneurship and see? And I mean, this is now 20 years ago. I think right now, I think a lot more people are embracing this idea of entrepreneurship and culture. 20 years ago, it was a little bit different. I think it was more of a radical idea to kind of go down that road. But that's what I was. I was there. I was working on Wall Street. I was making a good amount of money. But I realized I wanted to start my own business. And the first business that I decided to launch was the laundry service.
What was the laundry service? Let's start there, because I read you had clients like Mariah Carey.
Yeah. So what we did is, it's interesting, right? So it's a high-end laundry service. So the idea was, you know, if you buy that Gucci sweater, you don't really want to put it in the washing machine because it could mess up. There's certain dry cleaners you don't necessarily want to take it to because they might not do a good job with it. So our idea was, hey, we're going to take the best care for high quality items. Mm. So if you have a Gucci sweater, if you have a wedding dress, if you have a custom suit that you want to make sure is going to come back in perfect condition, you send it to us. You're going to pay a little bit more, but we're going to take care of it. We're going to clean it, and we're going to get it back to you. That was the idea behind the service. We didn't know. We were just looking at people with expensive clothing. And what ended up happening is a lot of celebrities somehow caught wind that we were out there. And so Mariah Carey was a customer, Jennifer Lopez, Jay-Z, and Beyonce. So we started getting all these celebrity clients. And then the newspapers started writing about us. And it kind of became a trendy laundry service. You know, it kind of almost came out of nowhere. And that was kind of my first kind of realization of how important and how big celebrity and celebrity culture was.
Is that what got you started down the path you're right now? Because I've read that you how long did you own the laundry service for?
It took about a year or so to build it up. And then we launched it. We were in operation for two and a half years. So I'd say three and a half years altogether.
And then you ended up selling the company. Is that what happened?
Yeah, we sold the company and then started Media Takeout.
And then you're still doing Media Takeout to this day. So let's talk about Media Takeout. From what I'm seeing here, 92% of Black Americans who have internet access look at Media Takeout.
Yeah. So last year, you probably don't know any Black person that wasn't on Media Takeout in the last 12 months. And that's not just you. That's anybody in America. probably doesn't know anyone. And that's just kind of the reach that we've gotten out there, right? Like we have, you know, a lot of times people think about it, they think about, oh, it's just, you know, celebrity gossip. So it's mostly women audience. And we do have a large women, female audience. But remember too, we'll talk about sports stars. Mm. Now you got a male audience, right? Like we might talk about political stuff. So now you have kind of a different audience, right? So we touch on many, it's scandalous. It's, you know, it's news, it's gossip, but it hits so many different areas of kind of what the Black experience is that it's hard to be Black and not find your way onto Media Takeout one day or another.
When you started Media Takeout, go back to the beginning, where were you getting information from? I think for most people, they think they look at something like Media Takeout and they're like, well, there's no way I could build that. I don't know any celebrities. You know what I mean? Like, how can I do that? So where was that coming from at first?
Well, at first it was actually a lot easier. It's easy now with social media, but at first it was really because there was this kind of, there was a flaw in kind of the market. You had all of these places, you had magazines, you had television, TV stations at the time, BET and TV One. You had radio stations. So there were tons of entertainment insiders, but nobody was really able to report on the gossip. The radio stations couldn't really report on the gossip because they needed the artists to come into the show
right
when they were promoting their albums, or they had like a music festival or a concert or whatever that they needed buy-in from the celebrities. So they couldn't say the gossip about the celebrities, because then the celebrity would say, hey, I'm never going to go on that radio station again.
Right.
The same goes with magazines. The magazines were out there, but you needed a celebrity on the cover to sell the actual magazine. So the magazines couldn't really touch on the gossip. And then you had the TV stations. They had their big awards ceremonies, like the BET Awards, that they needed all the celebrities to come to. So they couldn't talk about the gossip. So you had all of these entertainment kind of vehicles out there at the time, and all of the people that were worked in them, right? Like you could get to know radio DJs or people who work behind the scenes at BET or work in the magazines. They knew the tea. They just couldn't report it because the place that they worked on didn't have it. So it was easy to just find them and say, hey, do you know anything? And they'd be like, oh yeah, I know this and this and this, but I can't report on it. And there was no way really to report on it. Right. We just kind of said, we'll be the place that will report on all this stuff. And so all of the people would come to us, they'd give us the tea, we'd put it out there, and then that was kind of how we came out.
That started in 2006?
2006, yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, did you catch on immediately? Did you know you had something the first day you published it, or how long did it take to really like get going?
I think for the first couple of months, I didn't really know anything. And then, you know, it was just a blessing. Wendy Williams, obviously one of the great TV talk show host. Yeah. At the time, she had a radio station. She was a radio DJ. And she just found Media Takeout. She was like, hey, listen, there's this website and they're reporting this. And so she would read them, right? Because Wendy Williams is one of the few places out there that would actually report the team.
Right.
Right. And so people would listen to Wendy Williams. They'd be like, oh, Wendy Williams is talking about this site, Media Takeout. And she'd talk about it over and over and over again. And eventually a lot of her audience, and she had obviously millions and millions of audience on the radio, became Media Takeout readers. And that really like fueled the growth of Media Takeout.
At what point did it become profitable for you? Because you're talking 2006. This was a different world back then. One, and two, I know this working in hip hop radio for the past 20 years, advertisers or companies looking to advertise don't always look in this direction. And you have to, it's a hard sell. You know, you could be in a cluster with a pop station, a country station, and a rock station, and you could be beating all of them in ratings, but the advertisers are going elsewhere. So in 2006, what's that like?
Yeah, in 2000, it's kind of the same. What you're saying was true in 2006, and it's true today.
Still, yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so I think the issue was always, and this comes down to like kind of a business model thing, which is you're pulling in two different directions, right? For whatever reason, and you know, there's societal or cultural reasons that go on. I don't believe that this is the right way to go about it. But there's this belief out there that if you're going to produce Black, African-American, hip-hop, whatever it is, content, it has to be as clean can be. Mm. And if you have even the slightest edge to it, it's seen as kind of non-friendly to advertisers. Now, they don't do this in other areas, right? Like, they don't do this in the areas of rock. They you know, they'll do this in celebrity gossip with respect to Black people, but they won't have the same restrictions on celebrity content if you're talking about white people. If you talk about white people with celebrity gossip, that's totally mainstream and totally okay. oh, you're talking about Black people celebrity gossip. Oh my God, this is crazy. This is non-advertising friendly, right? So there's this dichotomy that's out there that's pushed. And unfortunately, it's pushed by Black people too. Some Black people are pushing this too. And they say, well, no, we only want Black content that's completely clean and completely nice and everything. We're okay with white content being whatever it is, but Black content being, it has to be.
It's like held to a higher standard.
Yeah, yeah. It's held to a higher standard. And it's unfortunate because when you do that, and I think a lot of people that push it and believe it, maybe there are people that are listening to this think that that's true. What ends up happening is then a white company comes in into the hip hop space and they say that they're a white company so they can get the advertisers, but then they report on hip hop news so that they could get the hip hop news. And then they push all the Black companies out there. You see that with companies where you talk about Complex, right? That came in and pushed people out. There are other companies out there that are doing the same thing. And so what ends up happening is it actually makes it harder for a Black entrepreneur to become successful. So it's Black people, when you promote this kind of restrictive advertising policies, you're actually undermining an entire class of Black entrepreneurship and making it less likely that we have successful Black companies in the country. But that's kind of my spiel on this. But back to your point, kind of what happened there is, since you have this dichotomy that I explained, you have to just make you have to decide, which road are you going to take? Are you going to go down kind of the clean road, or are you going to go down, you know, the road that's kind of consistent with your brand, consistent with the kind of content that you want to put out there. And that's what we did. We said, look, you know what? If you're an advertiser and you don't want to deal with us, fine, goodbye, go. There are plenty of other places to go. We have the audience. And the belief was always, if we have the audience and we could continue to grow the audience, eventually that advertiser will come back. So initially, I think in 2006, 2007, and early on, it was difficult to get a lot of advertisers. But as we were growing and as we got more and more people and as we became more and more of a force within the culture, you couldn't in good faith be an advertiser and not be on media takeout. And so we ended up eventually getting most of those advertisers that didn't want us in the beginning eventually came on.
You kind of love to hear that, but you also kind of hate it too, because it shouldn't have been that struggle, because you know there are other blogs out there, white blogs out there, that were doing way less numbers and probably getting higher point for advertising than you were getting, you know, and that's frustrating. Like, I'm in more households, I'm winning, I'm beating them, but yet you're getting the short end there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a Black person, that's just kind of life, right? Like, that's been my life, you know, from birth. Right. So, you know, it's unfortunate. It's, you know, as I talk to people about it, I like to point out these things, because I think a lot of times people don't really think about this, right? Like, you read it, you kind of go from one place to another, and you're not really thinking about the implications to yourself, right? Because at the end of the day, we all would love to be able to open up our own businesses. And what if we go and you decide and you figure out a way to open up a business and people love your product and people are going out there and doing it, and then you find that there's this gigantic thing that's preventing you from being successful that is being supported by a lot of other Black people stopping your success, you know? That's the thing. It's a thought process that I think we just need to start thinking of. It's something that I think is a little bit counterintuitive to a lot of us. And it's something to just, at the end of the day, what we need as a culture, as a people, is we need more African-American Black businesses out there. And we need more successful ones. And the more that you have, the more successful ones that you have, the more change that you're going to see economically for us all. I think it's important to have political change, but economic change, I think, is important also.
And then you don't need their dollars at that point.
Right.
I say they like I'm not white, but yeah, I get completely what you're saying. You tread probably in the past, you know, since 2006, in some iffy, dangerous waters, I would think. And how many people have had? I mean, I would think your job is hard and probably anxiety producing at some point in some spots. Am I correct there? Or are you just able to just do this?
Yes, it's really not. I think, you know, I think a lot of times the first misconception a lot of people think is they think of, oh, the celebrities must hate you, Fred.
Right.
And I got to say, they don't. I go to Atlanta, I go to LA, and whenever I go there, my whole day is meeting with celebrities and some of the celebrities that we write about and the like. And people are shocked by that. And sometimes they'll see me like up at the club with someone and they'll be like, you know, the guy with media takeout is cool with so-and-so, this rapper or whatever. And the idea is, I think most celebrities kind of get what this is, right? Like, just like how Tom Cruise is not per se mad at TMZ. Right. Like if a story comes out, obviously he's not happy with it, but he's not like, oh my God, I hate TMZ. Right. Like there's a couple of people out there that might think like that, but for the most part, they're reading it, right? Like they're reading it, not necessarily about themselves, but they're reading it to see what other people are doing. That these, you know, other celebrities are their coworkers. So to a lot of them, this is like a trade press, right? Like this is like, you know, like if you work on Wall Street and you read the Wall Street Journal, that's what you do to kind of right. see what all the other people are doing. And when you want to see what other rappers are doing or whatever, you're on, you see Media Takeout. Remember too, the other side of it is you have this kind of binary relationship, right? Like, so one day we might be reporting on a messy breakup you might be going through. The next day we're talking about your album sales and the concert that you're promoting that's going really well, driving ticket sales, right? So at the end of the day, there's this kind of love-hate relationship that they have where we're doing a lot of things that are helping their celebrity. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, we're reporting on stuff that they might not want us to report on. So depending on where we are, right? Like if we've just reported on, you know, the success of Lil Baby's new tour, you know, the whole camp is happy, right? If we're talking about the breakup with him and his girlfriend, they might not be as happy. But like right. I said, it's never in one camp or the other. And you're never in either one of them very long, right? Because, you know, even if we report on a breakup today, he's got a tour next week that we're going to report on and he's going to be happy about. And that's why I think a lot of it is just never all that. It's not all that serious. I think that the couple of things that we've made a concerted effort to is we don't report on the type of hip hop beefs that could lead to violence. We've made a concerted effort to kind of stay out of that role. And the other part, which I think is important and what some of the OGs in media told me, is you never want to report on a story that's going to mess up a bag for somebody, right? Like if somebody's got a big deal coming up or something like that, you don't want to do anything that's going to mess up their bag, because at the end of the day, we're reporting on scandals, but we are actually fans. The people that are reading Media Takeout actually like these people. Right. We don't hate them, right? So we're not trying to destroy anyone. We're not trying to mess anyone's life up. If we're just going to talk about some, you know, temporary scandal in your life, that's what we do. But if we're not going to mess up your bag and we're not going to, you know, report on stuff that's going to get someone in any kind of problem, violence problem. I think if you stay out of those two areas,
everything else is kind of
you're fine and nobody really, everybody else sees it as kind of, you know, it's light.
It feels like the news cycle today in 2022, and I've been with the radio station I'm with now in Nashville for 20 years, so I mean I've been around as long as Media Takeout, a little longer actually, 5 years before that. So the news cycle seems so much quicker now than it did then. So like it feels like if you did drop a story and say I'm a celebrity, I get pissed off at your story, you've moved on to something else the next day, if not yeah. later on the same day. And it's like, all right, well, I'm off the hook here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was a day, I mean, I don't want to name names, but there was one time we broke a pretty salacious story about this one hip hop star. And then like I was hanging out in the VIP of the club that night, and then I saw him and I was like, oh man. And I knew we had a relationship before, so I was like, how's this going to go down? But he was totally fine with it. We were like just talking. It wasn't a big deal. It was a pretty big story. If I told you the story, you'd be like, really? You know, but so it's really not that big of a deal. Like I said, if you're not messed up, if you mess up someone's bag, yeah, you know, right. If you mess up, if you tell them something, you know, getting into like gang stuff or anything like that, which we don't touch any of that stuff. Like we might report on something after it happens, but people will tell us about stuff. Sometimes we'll have like angry promoters that want to put like an artist on blast and say, hey, you know, this person didn't show up or whatever. We don't touch any of those stories. And if you stay out of that, it's actually pretty surprising at how, you know, in the beginning, I was actually surprised at how, you know, so many celebrities want to be your friend.
I think a lot of people get into the lines of work they get into because they want to be talked about. And so right. even if it's bad, you're still talking about me. You know what I mean? And
it's on a different level too, right? Like, because a lot of times, especially let's say you're a rapper or a sports stars in particular, right? Like if you're an NBA player, if you're an NFL player, you're used to being talked about on ESPN, right? Like you're used to being talked about by Stephen A. Smith. But once you start getting talked about by Media Takeout, that totally opens up an entire world, right? Because if you're, let's say you're a football player, people know you in the helmet. They might know your number. They might know what you look like in pads. You know, now women know who you are, right? Women know who your name is, and they know what your face looks like, and they know what you, and it just turns your whole, it opens up an entirely new market to you. I mean, look at someone like Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is probably one of the biggest stars in the NFL, right? But what Ciara did for him, took the helmet off him, put him in a suit, put him on in the Met Gala, and, you know, and as big of a star as he is in the NFL, Russell Wilson, NFL player, would not be on the red carpet of the Met Gala without Ciara, right?
Absolutely.
And he's at the Oscars. He can be anywhere because of Ciara's. And I think just the same way as kind of that, you know, entrance into this new world, we can offer that to a lot of NFL and NBA stars. And that's part of the reason why they, you know, they're not friends with me because I'm a nice guy, right? Like, they're looking at me and they're like, hey, I see what they're doing with Russell Wilson, right? Could you, you know, give me some of that.
How's your strategy changed since the evolution of social media? I think 2006, you're probably looking MySpace days maybe, and then, you know, Facebook and then Instagram and now TikTok. Has your strategy changed at all when it comes to what you do?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, I think when kind of social media blew up maybe like 8 or 9 years ago or whenever it did, I think a lot of people in media, the first knee-jerk reaction was to say, hey, let's run and get on social media. Take all our content and throw it on social media as quickly as possible because, you know, particularly Instagram and Facebook. And that's the way to kind of win because that's the future of what media is going to be. Right. It's going to be on social media. I think most of the companies that did that regret that decision now that we're, you know, 7, 8, 9 years later. I think a lot of them that kind of started on social media, that's a different animal. But the ones that were off social media and decided to go on, they realized that was a mistake. And we didn't make that mistake. We decided to say, hey, look, we are going to live outside of social media. We're going to do everything that we can to keep our brand alive, keep our brand relevant without dumping all of our content onto social media. And I think that was, at the time, people were like, well, I don't know that that's necessarily a good decision to make.
Right.
But now that we are, you know, 9 years later and we're looking at kind of what is happening to media companies as they try and live on social media, and many of them are failing, you realize how important it is to have a brand outside of social media, right? Because when you have a page on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, you don't own that page. That is Facebook that owns your page and they're allowing you to be on it. And at any point, they could take it back without any notice and say, because it's their page, they could say, well, we're taking our page back. At any point, they could decide to, you know, to limit the amount of reach that you have with your audience, right? Like, it's not only not your page, it's not your audience. It's Facebook that's allowing you to have access to their audience. And at any moment, they could reduce that amount of access that you have to their audience. At any moment, they could just get rid of it. Or at any moment, they could change your business model to say, we no longer want you to have access to it, or we want you to do it, but you can't monetize. They could do whatever they want. And the folks over Facebook, I think, have been very good over the last couple of years of squeezing a lot of the publishers that decided to go on to it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's harder and harder to get your posts and your stories and things like that seen by people. They want you to pay for that now. And I probably would have told you 5, 10 years ago, like, what are y'all doing? What the fuck is making a dumbass decision? But now that when you think about it, you kept everybody where they are on where you can make as much money as possible. And that was a bold strategy, but I'm glad it paid off for you.
Right. I mean, the other side too is you have to recognize that whatever it is, whatever company it is, I know it makes you believe that, you know, Facebook and Instagram are going to be around forever, but they're not. You know, right. they're going to disappear just like any. There's this life cycle to a lot of these companies, and it's usually somewhere around 10 years. And when you're looking at the numbers, Facebook and Instagram numbers are going down. Younger people. I know my kids, when I tell them about Instagram, they're like, Instagram, that's for old people, you know? So Instagram is kind of, people are just kind of getting rid of it. You know, I think, you know, if you're 20, 28, 29 to the 30s, you're probably still into it and you probably think that's the way to go. But if you're 20, you already know what I'm saying is true, that you probably never go on Instagram, you're on Snapchat or TikTok, right? So I think now we were never able to kind of work out the right Facebook, Instagram strategy, just because, like I said, the way that they set it up in a way that you don't have control over their audience. You don't have, you're essentially a Facebook employee. You know, you're essentially like an Uber driver for Facebook.
Yeah. Right?
That's what you are when you have the.
And for your business, you would end up giving away your content.
Right.
For free.
You're giving it away for free in the hopes that somehow there's going to be some return, which isn't entirely clear how. TikTok, they operate a lot differently, and it's a bizarre thing that in order to get kind of like a good deal with a social media company, you have to go outside of the United States to get it, right? Like, you have to go to China to get a good deal, right? Because the U.S. companies are all going to fleece you. But TikTok operates a lot differently, and I think we're working on implementing a TikTok strategy. I think everybody's going to find really interesting. There's a lot of interesting celebrities. that are going to be working with us on it. And over the next couple of weeks and months, we're going to be launching it. I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
That's dope, man. I also see that you have a non-algorithm-based children's streaming app that prides itself on safety and content for kids. I'm very interested in that. I have a four-year-old daughter. And yeah, sometimes she makes a wrong turn on YouTube and my wife and I had to run real quick to the iPad. So
that was interesting. We actually did that. I ran that business for a couple of years and ended up just shutting it down last year. Oh. So we don't have it anymore. But the idea is still there. And hopefully there's some people out there. I know that there are tons of entrepreneurs that listen to the show. If you are an entrepreneur, this is a great opportunity to kind of go out there and find out. There's so many kids. There's so many new apps that are out there. And, you know, if you're on just something simple like iTunes, right? Like you listen to iTunes music and sometimes your kids will like a song. They might like a Lil Nas X song, right? So they'll say, hey, I want listen to Lil Nas X. But if you go on iTunes and you find Lil Nas X, they might give you like the unclean version of it. Right. And you're like, oh my God, how do I do this? There's got to be a way to kind of figure out a way to completely like child friendly the internet in a way that makes sense. And you would think it's already done, but it's not. The fact that you can go on YouTube, even YouTube Kids, which is out there, you could still find some pretty creepy videos on there. There's got to be a way to kind of figure out how to kind of work all this together. That's what we were trying to do. It's a big task. It just didn't make sense for me to kind of take on a task that enormous and kind of continue on with Media Takeout and to launch a lot of the newer things that we were doing over there. So we kind of abandoned that project, but I'm still totally committed on it. And if there's any entrepreneur out there that's listening about it, I think it's a worthwhile place to go into. I think there's millions and millions of people that would really appreciate anything that you could come up with on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Because even when you're dealing with kids' content, my daughter's 4. I don't want her watching something that's appropriate for somebody 10. If you're not a parent, you might not get it, but it's there's a difference there. There's things that we don't say around her that we would say to a 10-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really tricky. And the thing about it too is, you know, you see people and you see other, you know, we were really careful with our kids about what they can watch and what they can't watch. But even then, right, like it's all based on an algorithm. So the kids like watching one thing that's completely safe, you might go to the bathroom and then you come back and you're like, oh my God, what's going on?
How do we get here?
You know, it gets there. And you would think that there's a way around it, right? Like, just like, I don't know. I mean, we were thinking about like, there's AI ways around it. There are other ways around it. I don't know why places like Google and Apple haven't figured out a way to go around this. It seems like an obvious thing to do. I just don't get it.
I don't either.
But hopefully somebody that's listening to this will figure it out. They'll come up with it. They'll make $1 billion, and then they'll be on your podcast.
On
later.
The podcast, yeah. Come
say,
on back.
Hey, look. Hey. Look, I listened to this guy, and he told me this. I can't remember what his name was. He ran some site called Media or something, and he gave me this idea, and I'm a billionaire now. Right?
I'm hoping for a small cut of that. I just want to retire. That's it. Fred, and where can everybody catch up with you? Are you personally on social media, or did you just keep Media Takeout off?
I'm not on social media. I try and stay away from it as much as I can. but if you really want to know what's going on, you could visit Media Takeout every day. We have the hottest tea. We have everything that's going on in reality shows and sports, relationships, hip hop. You guys will love it.
Hey man, you're super dope on this. I definitely appreciate taking time out and doing this. And hopefully we can catch up again one day.
Anytime, man.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen, plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other. Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. Want to say thank you once again to my guest Fred M. Obviously, he does not have social media as we spoke about in the episode, but you can support him by checking out MediaTakeout.com as much as possible. I, however, do have social media, and you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, everything at DoloWite101, DoloWite 101. Don't forget, no matter what platform you are currently listening to this episode on, make sure you follow and subscribe. If they let you rate and review, do that, as long as you're just saying nice things. Mean things, you can always DM me if you just have to get it off your chest. I understand. Sometimes we all got to get shit off of our chest. But anyway, brand new episode drops next Wednesday morning early. Super dope episode, too. My guest next week, the Slim and Huskies founders, Clint, Demo, and EJ are going to be sitting with me. So that's going to be a dope episode. Check me out next week. Till then, I'm gone.